Welcome to Have You Heard the AABP Podcast. My name is Dr. Fred Gingrich. I'm the Executive Director of AABP. This podcast was developed by the AABP Young Stock Committee. If you're interested in cattle young stock, I encourage you to check out that committee resource page, as well as consider joining that committee or any of the AABP committees. Today, we are talking with Dr. Sharif Ali, who is a veterinarian and epidemiologist in California at the Veterinary Medical Teaching and Research Center, associated with the University of California, Davis. The title is Epidemiological Tools for Managing BRD in Dairy Calves. BRD is not just a beef industry disease. Dr. Ali is going to talk about the importance of it in dairy calves, monitoring and using some risk assessment tools that veterinarians can walk producers through to evaluate their BRD risk status. What a great way to get involved on cattle operations and demonstrate your value and improve the health and welfare of dairy calves. Check out the links in the show notes to download some of these risk assessment tools and stay tuned for more information. To our show, Sharif, please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you, Fred. My name is Sharif Ali. I'm a veterinarian. I graduated from Cairo University, as I like to say, in the previous century. And soon after graduating, I practiced veterinary medicine in one of the largest dairy farms in northern Africa, in Egypt. And 2 years of practicing there, working on registered American Holstein, I got to learn from some of the most adept vets over there in practice. And soon after, I realized that I need to understand more about the principles of disease and how the disease spreads and how can we prevent it. I then pursued an internship in production medicine at University of Idaho. After that 1 year, my mentors there identified my interest in preventive vet med, and they highly recommended the residency at University of California, Davis, at the vet school. And back then, it's called the Herd Health and Reproduction Residency. It has a unique program where residents will complete in their second of 3 years, the Master's in Preventive Vet Med. And that was a pivotal moment in my career where I became dedicated to preventing the disease and not just treating it. And so that's the master's in preventive vet med that allowed me to make that change or emphasis in my career. When I was done with my residency, I realized I'm not quite done yet, and my interest in epidemiology grew further, and I pursued a PhD in epidemiology. In that, I was trained as on Yoni's disease and managed to complete the residency and the master's and PhD. And then once I finished my PhD in epidemiology, I became a faculty at the Veterinary Medicine Teaching and Research Center, the VMTRC, which is part of the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis. It's located in Tulare County in California. This is really a great opportunity for me to do research to advance dairy cattle health and welfare, which is what my primary goal, career goal is.
We really appreciate you being on the show today, Sharif. And first off, I want to talk about just your perspective as an epidemiologist. Why is bovine respiratory disease, and we're going to call that BRD during the podcast today, why is BRD so important in dairy calves?
BRD affects dairy calves early on in life in their pre-weaning period. And despite being the number two cause of morbidity, illness that is, and mortality in this age group, it is the number one cause of both metrics. Post-weaning, all the way through the growth period, until these are heifers that can then start their production as cows. BRD in the pre-weaning period sets the stage, if you will, for the success of these calves later on in life. And interestingly, in the last couple of decades, if we go back to some of the USDA surveys conducted nationwide, we can see that from, for example, from the Dairy 2007 study, the percent of unweaned heifers that had BRD affection or disease were about 12.4%. And fast forward in Dairy 2014 study, as USDA calls them, it was still 12%. If we look at mortality estimates for this age group, the percent of deaths in pre-weaned calves that were due to BRD in 2007 was about 22.5%. And in 2014, it was 24%. And mind it that this basically shows that there hasn't been a change in morbidity and mortality despite advances in our understanding of the disease transmission, risk factors, and epidemiology and acting upon these. And if these dates sound a little bit far away, our own studies from California show actually that, and these are studies conducted on, one of them, for example, is conducted on over 11,000 calves followed from birth to weaning. And we can see that these calves are on a convenient sample of 5 dairies, but distributed throughout the 3 major milk sheds in California, so Northern California, Central California, and Southern California. And we see that the BRD incidence, so what percent of the calves raised pre-weaning get BRD, and it's an average of about 22 to 23%. And that's higher than what we've seen even from the USDA studies. If you look at the mortality, the proportion of those mortalities from due to BRD from the entire number of calves that die in the pre-weaning period, it's again about 19 to 20%. So really it hasn't moved much over the last 20 years or 20 decades, if you will. And for that reason, it is a very important disease for us to look at it again and try to control it so we can have better outcomes post-weaning all the way to growth and lactation.
It's a very common disease and everybody's familiar with it, but it seems to be difficult to control. Why? What are some reasons for that?
The reasons are also quite known. They're not hidden, but it's a multifactorial disease. And by that, I specifically mean it has multiple etiological causes. Bacterial and viral primarily are the pathogens that cause the disease. And within each of these, there is numerous bacterial species and viruses that can cause the disease. And the end product is the disease becomes endemic in a herd. And it is an endemic disease in all dairy herds. But the complexity of the etiology translates to a complexity in the pathogenesis also. And at the same time, this is observed by us as calf caretakers, producers, veterinarians, as a disease that comes with a variable presentation, multiple clinical signs with different occurrence rates that may differ over time and by region. And at the same time, because of the way the disease presents itself, meaning a calf can be transiently sick and presenting with clinical signs, and at times it can recover. However, the pneumonia, which is the primary pathogenesis that happens in BRD and what we are primarily concerned with, the inflammation of the lung or pneumonia, we don't get to see that in a chronic stage of the disease. So the multiple stages of disease from acute to chronic may also add to the complexity. And then, of course, the aspect of the economics and the expense of the diagnostics and the variability between these diagnostic test accuracies, all this rightly makes this disease very complex. And from the producer's perspective, these multiple etiologies and complex risk factors that we'll talk about soon here for BRD, they ultimately produce a challenge in diagnoses. And once we are challenged in diagnosing such a disease, mistakes happen. And the mistakes end up being either false cases that we treat unnecessarily, which unfortunately also compounds the economics of such a disease, and other factors come in like antimicrobial resistance and loss of efficacy of some of these drugs. And the other type of mistakes that can happen are the false negatives or the missed cases. And that is also very costly, but not necessarily money, but more in production losses in the current pre-weaning period growth rates and post-weaning, as we discussed. And And definitely in a way that some of us may not be fully aware of it or may not see it on the moment, but there's suboptimal welfare issues that happen at that point for the calf.
You're an epidemiologist. How can epidemiology be used to understand and then manage BRD?
By epidemiology or epi, it would help by understanding, first of all, the occurrence of the disease. How frequent is it? And how does this occurrence change by any reasonable risk factors such as region, time, herd size, herd breed, management practices? And that takes us to the risk factors of the disease. Epidemiology would, as a science applied to data collected from study designs on well-defined populations, we understand what these population compositions are. We can then understand the risk factors and essentially also understand their relative importance. With such a complex disease and a myriad of risk factors, it's inevitable that we'll be limited, and we being the vet and the producer, in what we can change today. A comprehensive health program may involve changes over time, but in the moment when I have an increase in cases and I'm hurting because of a BRD outbreak, I need to prioritize what I can intervene and change in the moment. And epidemiology can help there by optimizing, by first understanding what are the most important issues and optimizing them, optimizing the approach to mitigate and intervene to address an outbreak of BRD in calves. And I'll wrap this specific answer by saying further that this may seem an easy task at the beginning, but it really involves a comprehensive assessment of all the risk factors in the current situation, being a herd with an increase in cases, let's say, of BRD, so an outbreak. And herd veterinarians are very well poised to tackle such issues because they have a working relationship with producers. They understand very well the changes that happened in the near and the far past. They understand what the management practices are. They're able to look at the situation and understand what changes happened and come up with an intervention. But what happens in the real thought there, and if we've seen this happen multiple times, is there's a latent or a hidden assessment of all what's happening. And it becomes more clear if you're asked to go to a herd where you don't have a working relationship with it. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves asking questions, a lot of questions. And that's what I mean by it requires a comprehensive assessment, given all the risk factors that BRD is associated with.
And let's talk about the California State Survey. Sharif, were there any new lessons learned?
The impetus behind the state survey that we did as one of our very first BRD studies was to understand what are the differences in management practices across the different regions in California. And this will be important elsewhere too, wherever especially the environment and the management practices are common. But even in other regions, researchers and veterinarians should be cognizant of what may change in their localities. That survey taught us a few things, which is when you have a survey that has 40 or so questions, you really have a very high dimension situation there. And it requires understanding what are the principal factors that are related to the occurrence of BRD. And using survey analysis tools, we were able to identify that there are really six major risk factor topics, if you will, that varied quite a bit between all the dairies that responded. And within those, we were able to understand a few new questions that came up from the responses of the producers. We didn't quite think of them initially. So I think it's valuable to always assess what the situation is. Again, even though you've been familiar with the industry or the locality where dairies are, it was a new lesson for me myself to learn new things. And these six topics, if you will, of the risk factors are herd demographics, which one can appreciate that it would have the breed, herd size, location, the general type of production, organic or not, and questions like that. The remaining five are really key to risk factors that lend themselves to intervention. And the first is the maternity pen management. That was a very important key area of management. Next was the colostrum management, followed by the feeding program, and then vaccination and housing. These were the six components. We learned from that survey, for example, that dust abatement, before the survey, I would have said dust abatement is water trucks, making sure surfaces around the hutches or wherever the calves are raised in group pens do not have dust generating surfaces. But we actually also learned that in certain areas in California, producers are innovative and they borrowed use of magnesium sulfate application on dust surfaces that can generate dust. And they borrowed this from the equestrian arena management, where placing the specific salt in a specific way and watering in a specific way and coming back again and working it through the surfaces will reduce the dust as animals or vehicles drive over it. And so there, it's always a good idea, I think. And we took the six main areas that we identified and used them in our other studies that followed after that in assessing what management practices could be risk factors.
And let's follow up with that, with talking about some of the management practices that increase risk to BRD morbidity and mortality.
Following that, we did a couple of studies statewide. And the first is a cross-sectional study in person where we would take the questions that we identified from the survey in those six topics, and we would ask these questions with the producer in person, and then we would determine the prevalence of BRD in the herd, in the calf herd at the same time. And so it's a point in time in the management. And we were able to enroll 104 dairies. A lot of these were respondents from the survey, and an equal amount or so probably were from our contacts and reaching out to as many vets that we can and having us access to their herds. But it involved estimating basically the prevalence of BRD at that point in time and an assessment of the management practices. We've then confirmed a few things about this population of 104 dairies and how it may relate to the entire state's population of dairy calves. We learned that about 75% of the dairies we visited had female heifers, heifer calves, and about 25% of the calves were males. 82% of these were Holstein and 13% were Jerseys. And this study specifically, we called it the BRD 100 study, just a reference back to the 104 dairies. We found very interesting hypothesis-generating findings. We would identify that bedding material in the calving pen had quite a bit of a variance or variation in the prevalence of BRD in the calves that were born, depending on whether the bedding material was dry manure, sand, whether they used gypsum or not, whether it was pasture. And so just that for an example, dairies that use dry manure as a bedding material in the calving pen, they had a mean of about 4.5% BRD prevalence. If we look at gypsum, we see that it is 3%. And interestingly, in the pasture, where calves are raised in pasture, it was about 16%. Another factor, for example, that we were very intrigued by was the number of bedding changes per month. That showed a lot of variability. And interestingly, a cutoff of 5 times of changing the maternity pen bedding a month, we would see a prevalence of less than 4% in BRD in the calves if they were born in maternity pens that the management had changed the bedding more than 5 times. And if dairies changed the bedding 5 or less times, we had an increase in prevalence of greater than 8%. Whether there is a roof or shelter over the maternity pen, that mattered. Where we'd see BRD prevalence of 5% if there was a roof over the maternity pen, or 15% if there was no roof. So we're starting to see now a lot of hypotheses in the maternity pen management. And that was another affirmation to the survey findings, where the survey analysis showed that was a key and distinct management area on its own. If we look at things like colostrum management area, we found interestingly that dairies that store colostrum for heat treatment in solid containers, they would do the heat treatment and then pack it in solid bottles. versus bags. We had quite a variation in prevalence there too. So dairies that heat treated colostrum and stored in solid plastic containers, they had about 7.5% prevalence of BRD in the calves. And those that used the bags, it was about 2.5%. So again, something new we learned from the survey and from this study. With the failure of passive transfer, if the calves received an adequate amount of colostrum, we found that the prevalence then is about 5.5%. And if there is no, if actually there was failure of passive transfer, it was about 8%. Again, we see some confirmation of knowledge that is known already. One of the factors that we then continued to work on over the years is group housing versus individual housed calves. And the data from the BRD100 study clearly shows there's an increase in the with group housing. Later on, and it's not the topic of this podcast, but later on we designed studies that looked at whether the socialization and the social play and the better welfare behavior from group house may have other effects other than just an increase in BRD. And definitely that we see evidence of improvement there in both in the behavior and in the production. So looking at average daily gain and factors like that. So that's just a hint about what we've been working on more recently. Back to the BRD100 study, there's also housing. We learned that use of metal structured hutches was one of the higher risks for BRD compared to wooden or plastic hutches. If we look at feeding, it's one of the options we provided based on the survey was saleable milk and then the traditional sources of milk fed to calves, the more conventional one we're used to, which are waste milk and milk replacer and a mix of sources. And the lowest of all of these was saleable milk. Dairies that fed saleable milk had about 2.5% BRD prevalence compared to waste milk, 4.5%. And mixed sources being 7%. And maybe mixed sources is a sign of some other aspects in the management, such as not enough milk or not enough waste milk, and then mixing and whether mixing is done correctly or not for milk replacer. But it's higher. We found that was higher. And that's one of the things with these cross-sectional studies. You're really looking at a point in time and you don't have the preview of what are the factors that led up to that. Interestingly, also in milk feeding management, the order of feeding calves mattered. And a few dairies had the luxury of feeding the healthy ones first. And compared that to most of the dairies where we were able to look at dairies that feed the youngest typically first or the oldest first. So I'll just talk about the feeding the oldest calves first usually led to about 10% prevalence in BRD. And if you fed the youngest calves first, usually led to 5.5% of BRD. And so that may have to do probably with transmission of whatever through fomites, whatever infectious agents between one calf that may have diarrhea or pneumonia to another and how that may affect also BRD. We realized that road surfaces near the calves, of course, come in variety of types of roads, paved, gravel, dirt, whether they use dust abatement or not. If there's paved surfaces beside the hutches, then there's lower prevalence. Dairies that use dust abatement had a higher prevalence in BRD, about 7.5 compared to about 6 if they didn't use dust abatement. And that was interesting because we managed to actually, on a lot of these dairies, while we're there, we would see the water truck driving by and we would record in a few of those or whatever we can, whether or not there was dust observed. Because some of the trucks would drive at a quicker rate and they would actually generate dust. And so our explanation why the prevalence was higher on dairies that had dust abatement using water trucks was that they generated dust. They weren't moving at a slower speed. Maybe there weren't enough nozzles around the rear end of the truck and where the wheels may generate dust, more dust. Similarly, maybe the water nozzles weren't of the right release enough volume of water or at the speed or the pressure that they should. And so some of these factors were interesting to us. And I think these are low-hanging fruit that could be addressed by slowing the speed and, of course, reassessing the water dispensed by the trucks. Other interesting factors are use of lagoon water to flush below the hutches, in raised hutches, calf hutches, that is. But so circa 2015, there were some few dairies that are still using fresh water. That's related and linked probably to the interest in Yoni's disease control. So that's one of the things that is recommended there. But interestingly, if dairy is flushed with lagoon water, of course, with the drought, that's probably what where everybody is using now. They had a prevalence, BRD prevalence in their calves of about 12%. With fresh water flush, and we're not recommending that given that we're in a drought, but the prevalence was as low as 0.75, less than 1%. Very drastic difference there too. And so the BRD 100 offered us a lot of insights and hypotheses generating things like if there's calf-to-calf contact or not. And we learned, for example, that calf-to-calf contact mattered, especially when calves were about 75 days in age. Younger, maybe not that much. Amount of milk fed. Interestingly, when you feed 3 versus 4 quarters of milk a day to a calf, it mattered what breed. Jersey seemed to, of course, they as they grow, they need more, but they seem to suffer more or have greater risk of BRD. But interestingly, the larger body weight Holsteins, when fed 3 liters, they suffered more than the Jerseys. And depending on the breed, 3 versus 4 quarts of milk or liters of milk a day, the Holsteins would be at a greater disadvantage than Jerseys. And so these are good hypotheses generating data from a cross-sectional study that we then use later to study risk of BRD in a longitudinal fashion, if you will.
And is that your BRD 10K study? Is that, what is that study and what were its major findings, Sharif? Is that just a larger data set?
The BRD 10K is the follow-up to the BRD 100. And the idea there was to take these hypotheses, and now that we've seen the variability across different milk sheds, the 3 milk sheds in California, to identify a set of herds that we have access to, meaning we can actually get to, and we have the permission of the owner to then do a study that's almost a year or a year plus more monitoring calves from birth to weaning. And so this is basically a 60 to even 100 day follow-up for these calves. They were enrolled on 6 herds that were Holsteins and Jerseys with a weaning age that varied from 54 to 100 days. So the cooperation of the owner and the herd veterinarian was key there. And we identified 2 of these herds in Northern California and 3 in the northern half of the Central Valley, what we call the San Joaquin Valley, and then 1 herd in the southern half of the San Joaquin Valley, so Southern California, if you will. We called it the 10K at the end of the study when we realized we've enrolled and had data for about close to about 11,900 calves enrolled.
And what were the major findings of that study, Sharif?
The maternity pen management findings were key to us understanding what are the most important questions that could be asked to producers when trying to assess the risk of the maternity pen management on their dairies. To that end, we've identified questions like whether cows and heifers calve together. Our models showed that there is an increase in risk when calves and heifers are calving together in the same pens. The term odds ratio, which I'll repeat often here to describe the strength of an association between a risk factors and BRD. So in this case, the risk factor is cows and heifers calving together, and the outcome being BRD. We measure the strength of that association using the odds ratio, and that metric, essentially, if it's greater than 1, it's a risk factor or shows that there are higher odds of BRD if this factor is observed. And so in this case, we see an odds ratio of 1.4, which indicates to me that there's an uptick in the odds of BRD in calves that are born to maternity pens where cows and heifers calve together. And in that case, that increases about 40% more, hence the odds ratio of 1.4. But the maternity pen management, we can summarize to basically 5 key factors, whether they calve cows and heifer together. The number of maternity pen bedding changes, this became even more evident in the BRD 10K study. And the same metric or cutoff was used there. If they change the bedding, more than 5 times, so 6, 7, 8, etc. per month, there was definitely a reduction in the odds of BRD in calves. When we looked at bedding materials in calving pens, we can see that dirt and plant material, if you will, so by that we mean rice hulls, almond hulls, straw, wood shavings, these both had higher odds ratios. However, dirt is, compared to dried manure, dried manure with gypsum, that is, dirt compared to dried manure and gypsum had the higher odds ratio of even 4, which means 4 times the odds of BRD in calves born on dirt compared to dried manure with gypsum. Pasture, calving in the pasture was also higher odds of BRD. And interestingly, if calves were removed from the dam within 1 hour of calving, we see a reduction in odds of BRD also. So these are the 5 factors that we identified from the BRD 10K into the maternity pen management factors. And so it's important to realize that there is, of course, dairies that may have BRD issues in their calf herd and maybe other factors that may come into play. But the majority, based on the 104 and the 5 dairies that we included in these, about over 14,000 calves studied, these were 5 most determining ones in what's out there. If we look at the second management area, so again, we identified herd demographics, maternity pen from the survey, and the colostrum management. In the BRD 10K, we learned questions such as, what is the source of colostrum? And if it's pooled, it was higher risk for BRD. If we look at colostrum supplementation with, for example, a colostrum supplement, we realize that if the dairies actually monitored IgG or failure of passive transfer or one or the other, usually supplementation wasn't an issue. It seemed like the dairies had good control over colostrum management. They were checking things. But if they really never checked the colostrum fed or the failure of passive transfer, we realized that supplementation was a proxy or was a risk factor for higher BRD cases. So this is an example where initially it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense once you ask the question whether or not the dairy actually is monitoring their colostrum program or not. Amongst the factors, of course, was whether colostrum is heat treated or not. And again, if colostrum was not heat treated, there was higher failure of passive transfer. Interestingly, how long was the colostrum stored from harvest to heat treatment? If it was stored for more than 10 hours, that was actually a risk factor for BRD. Whether or not the dairies monitored the bacterial content, submitted culture results for colostrum samples for culture results before and after heat treatment, that was important because if they did, they had lower risk of BRD. And I think some of these factors, they really are proxy to good calf health management, if you will. And so if they do that, it's not really the act of submitting the colostrum sample that's protective. It's what information comes from it and the intention to get this piece of information and act upon it that actually results in a reduction in BRD risk. Use of colostrum from first calf heifers, that was an interesting one because, again, initially, if they did, the data showed that it was a risk factor. But if you ask the question whether they do manage the colostrum, their colostrum program, they do ensure that the quality fed to the calves passes the acceptable standards, then we found that those dairies don't have a risk for BRD as much as those that the dairies that do not assess the quality of the colostrum being fed to their calves. So again, it's not the matter of you shouldn't feed first heifer colostrum. It's really, are you checking it and feeding it if it's appropriate, if you will? And then adding a preservative to storing colostrum. That's one of the things we learned from the survey, and it made it through to our final list, if you will, of questions that we think are important for colostrum management. And if there was storage issues in the past, meaning the dairy had experiences with colostrum going bad or failure of passive transfer, if that's the case, we found that using the preservative was an indication of a higher risk of BRD compared to dairies that never had colostrum storage issues. And so we wonder whether that was a band-aid to try to solve a problem by adding the preservative, and the problem still exists and may have, that may not solve it as well, if you will. And the bottles versus the bags, that made it through also to our models. And when I say it made it to our final models, meaning it's significant and it was important. But again, the same direction, bags were more protective if the colostrum was stored in bags and refrigerated in bags versus solid bottles. And may have to do, we don't know why, we probably, and others may do that too, which is check the microbiology and the quality of the colostrum in terms of microbiology. Maybe bags allow for better heat treatment and better cooling and quicker cooling after that versus the bottles, which are known to have a specific area, of course, while a bag will allow the fluids to have much more thinner cross sections, if you will, for heat and for heat transfer first and then for cooling. Testing for IgG was an important factor. Feeding less than 3 quarts of colostrum the first 12 hours was an important factor in the right directions, of course, meaning if calves are not fed 3 quarters the first 12 hours, there was a higher risk compared to if they were fed 3 quarters at least. And whether they check calves for failure of passive transfer. And again, that's a factor where it's not just the act of testing calves for failure of passive transfer, but rather what will you do with these results? And so we find that, interestingly, and if calves are tested for failure of passive transfer, and if the colostrum management is changed, if they found that it's inadequate, in that case, there was no risk. It's only when dairies would test and wouldn't act upon these results, meaning there could be low total proteins in the calves and they wouldn't necessarily make a change, then we found that there's a higher risk for BRD. So that's the third risk management or risk topic that in the calf management that we've studied. The fourth is the calf milk feeding. And this one, a few highlights are the feeding order again, as we discussed earlier, and how much milk is fed and how often is the milk fed per day? Is it 3 or more times or 1 to 2 times? And the more times, the better, meaning the lower risk of BRD. And again, it's interestingly, similar metrics or management factors like pasteurization of the milk, whether the milk is tested before feeding for microbiology and whether they pasteurize, do they test it after pasteurization or not? And the sources of the milk. These are all factors that came into play. And the fourth risk topic, if you will, is vaccination. And this was interesting because regardless of the type of vaccine used, we assessed whether an intranasal vaccine is administered or not. And that was a significant protective factor, if you will. If calves got an intranasal vaccine, they had lower risk of BRD. And if calves were vaccinated with either an injectable killed or modified live vaccine, there was a reduction in BRD. And even more interesting was that if cows were vaccinated at any point in time in their prior lactation, so as a fresh cow before she became pregnant and then the calf was born, or at the dry period, any time really there was a reduction in BRD risk, if you will. And then the final factor or risk topic, our sixth one, is housing management. And that produced a lot of information where we actually got to confirm in the BRD 10K when trucks were dispensing water, trucks were dispensing water for dust abatement. We would actually record then every time we were there, whether, of course, in the summer season and the fall and maybe late spring, whether there was or was not dust observed. And in the model, we actually identified that where the truck was not effective, there was increase in risk of BRD in the calves. And we managed this correctly data-wise, meaning we identified the BRD after the days after the trucks would be observed generating dust or not, if you will. Magnesium chloride, that trick that we learned from the survey, we found that there is much less risk for those dairies. And if they did nothing, there was still risk. So the best thing is to use the water truck effectively, not create more dust, driving slowly, and all these good things. Interestingly, just the perception of dust by the producer was also a key indicator. Whether they see dust at all, rarely, or all year round, group house calves, complete roof, or at least shade cloth over the calves, these were all protective against BRD. and whether there was calf-to-calf contact. So once again, we confirmed that when calves that were aged 75 days, plus or minus, or around that period, calf-to-calf contact was a serious risk factor for BRD. And the type of hutch, is it metal, wood? When the material that the hutches are made out of is metal, were metal, we observed a higher risk for BRD compared to wood, for example. The flush system under the raised hutches was again significant, with recycled lagoon being a risk factor. These are the factors that we've identified from the BRD 10K under the major six management areas. So herd demographics, maternity, colostrum, milk feeding, vaccination, and housing.
I appreciate you walking us through the results of both of those studies. Very helpful as veterinarians work with their producers on BRD. Talk a little bit about some of the major conclusions and limitations from these studies.
One of our conclusions to the BRD 10K and the BRD 100 studies are that BRD will vary by the dairy management system and region and climate, even within California. We estimated that about 23% of calves will have got BRD on average between birth and weaning. And we're not far off from other studies. Dr. Windeyer et al., about 22% in one of the publications. NAMS, as we discussed earlier, so these are the dairy 2007, 2014, 18, 19, 20%. In another one of our studies, totally different set of herds with ultrasound and BRD scoring system, we had about 32%. We also learned that there are specific risk factors for mortality for calves too. And we're about 2.3% case fatality, if you will, of the cases that get BRD. About 2.3% of them died in the BRD 10K study. And the literature reports at about 6 to 14%. If you look at, again, Dr. Windeyer et al., Yuri et al., Dr. Sivula et al., about anywhere from 5 to 15%. Now, if you look at the mortality, proportion of the mortality caused by BRD, so of those that died, what percent died from BRD, we're about 19%, and other studies like Dr. Munashigiri's studies was about 19%. So we're right about there. Again, the good news is our estimates are similar to others, and the bad news is we, up until the point we did that study, we've confirmed that we haven't changed much in morbidity and mortality, even though we may have understood more about what's happening on California dairies. One of the interesting findings is the summer versus spring seasonal risk of BRD. And the BRD 10K and the BRD 100 found some of that, with, interestingly, in late spring and late fall being higher risk periods. We have a theory based on our conversations with the industry prior even to these studies that these periods come with quite a bit of fluctuation in daily maximum and minimum. So the weather in California, even though it's late spring or late fall, can get quite warm during the noon and afternoon. Yet in the night times, the temperatures will drop drastically. I think one other finding that we have to be careful about is, you know, the type of hutch. Hutches with more metal in them, be it roof or walls, they may, and we don't know why, but they have higher, greater BRD hazard, if you will. And it may be related to the more heat conduction and less protection from the temperatures. I have to mention the lagoon water. That was an important one. Calf-to-calf contact. And the nice thing is all what we know about colostrum management, pasteurizing, so heat treatment for colostrum and pasteurizing milk, feeding high-quality milk in terms of the contents, components, and the microbiology. So as good as it gets is saleable milk on the dairy. Feeding the right quantity in terms of group housing versus individual housing. For now, we need to understand how can we harvest the benefits of group housing with the better welfare and social play and the behavior advantages of group housing. We need to understand how to harvest these and yet mitigate the BRD risk that may come with that. And that may involve addressing these factors: vaccination, more milk, feed it more frequent during the day rather than less frequent, modifying the hutch, modifying the environment. Some of these things can be modified and tweaked to mitigate the risk of BRD, yet get advantages from the group housing, such as shade and avoiding factors such as rain, frost, that could be risk factors. As with all studies, as with all observational studies, they come with a set of weaknesses. So the BRD 100, of course, is cross-sectional. We talked about, we may not understand from a cross-sectional study the factors that led up to an outcome. We can just see the factor and the outcome simultaneously. That doesn't mean that the factor preceded the outcome. And so that's what made us conduct the observational longitudinal study, the cohort study, if you will, which is the BRD 10K. And even what we call residual confounding is an issue of all these observational studies. So unless it's experimental controlled trials, these are the ones that you can isolate one factor out and study one at a time while controlling everything else. I still think that comparing the findings to other studies shows the relevance of these findings.
Let's talk a little bit now about how veterinarians can apply this on farms. Let's talk about the role of on-farm BRD diagnostics, and then how can veterinarians use a clinical scoring system for BRD to train caregivers and implement treatment prevention programs on their farms.
So the diagnostics available to producers will include, of course, a range of tools, and they come with their own advantages and disadvantages. But just to list, ultrasound, of course, of the thorax, so to identify whether there's pneumonia in the lungs. Of course, testing the calf by collecting samples, and it could be anywhere from the nares to deep nasopharyngeal to bronchial alveolar lavages. So these are more aggressive tools that we can use, and they come with their costs, of course. It's my experience that most of the dairies around us here, at least, have a health protocol and follow the herd veterinarian's criteria to treat a calf for BRD. It's a mix of also experience of the calf caretaker, if you will. And then there is scoring systems. So in the last 20 years or so, there's been a rise in scoring systems for a lot of diseases. And probably that comes also from maybe even some from human medicine. The advantages of these systems is they're calf side, if you will. They are obviously very low cost. And some of the disadvantages is that they can only be as accurate as they're designed or as they're applied and how reliably they can be and so objectively used. And amongst the scoring systems, maybe it's a good chance to focus on that because we've used it quite a bit. And what led up to other studies too is using the scoring systems. And we have developed the California BRD scoring system, and it's actually developed and based on the Wisconsin BRD scoring system, which is part of the Wisconsin Calf Health scoring system, if you will. In our earlier studies, we've collaborated through a USDA BRD CAP, Collaborative Agricultural Project grant that looked at the genetics and the role of genetics in BRD in calves across the nation, multiple universities. And we used there the Wisconsin-California scoring system on over a thousand calves to determine their BRD status and then test them for their genetic makeup for genes that could be identified that are their presence or their activation would be a risk factor for BRD. The Wisconsin scoring system is a very smart clinical system, and its use allowed us to modify it and change and add some of the components that make up the California scoring system. The use of the Wisconsin scoring system data allowed us to develop the California scoring system, which identified cough, nasal discharge, ocular discharge, ear position, rectal temperature as factors that could be used in a scoring system, just as the Wisconsin identifies. However, we also identified abnormal respiration as a sixth factor that's important. And so these six factors make up the California scoring system, with the sixth being the abnormal respiration unique to the California scoring system. In terms of the, one of the changes that happened with the California scoring system is the simplification of the gradient of each of these clinical signs, meaning the Wisconsin system has a gradient from 0, 1, 2, and 3, and which would signify the severity of the disease. And while scoring hundreds of CABs, we realized that the reliability between me and my student or intern or other colleagues can vary, meaning one of the signalments, for example, clinical signs is nasal discharge. And that initially you think there's no question about that. And it's true for most, but there are CABs that will have some very little discharge. And by the time you look at it, it's gone. And your colleague may have noted it already. And so there's some variability and reliability issues there just inherent to these clinical signs. Another one that is like ear position, an ear flick or head shake. That's what a ear, what a drooped ear or an ear flick may happen. These are very objective. In their extreme, of course, they're objective. But the reality is a calf may have a drooped ear, and you may look at it and say, I don't see it quite drooped like you, like somebody else is seeing it. And so one of the things that were introduced with the California scoring system is the dichotomization of these levels of each of these clinical signs to simplify it and to allow for greater reliability there. And so for cough, for example, while the Wisconsin scoring system identifies spontaneous cough versus induced cough as different categories, for us, we wanted to attend to one of the complaints of the specific producer that they didn't like us jumping into hutch to induce cough every time. So for cough, for example, the California scoring system calls for not testing for the cough test, meaning there's no pressure applied to the pharynx or the throat area of the calf to test for a cough. And that would simplify the scoring system to either spontaneous cough or no cough heard or observed. And that comes with, of course, a disadvantage, which is the calf may have had a cough earlier, and once you were there, it just didn't cough. You may miss it. But it simplified that factor and allowed for not jumping into the hutch and all what may come with challenges to biosecurity there as you move from hutch to hutch. And working with a mile long of calf hutches, it becomes arduous and restrictive to do that. And if you're trying to change boots between every hutch, it's not realistic if you're really doing over 100 hutches and more. Nasal discharge, for example, any nasal discharge, any quantity, if you think it's abnormal beyond the nice, smooth, glistening muzzle of the bovine, then that case is a nasal discharge. Ocular discharge, same thing, any amount of discharge. So we're not talking about something very minor. We're talking about there's a staining of the skin. There's evidence of wetness and in the skin of the eyelid and what's below to the cheeks. Ear position and head tilt. We basically said if there's ear droop or head tilt, the calf has an abnormality there. Whether it flicks its ear or shakes its ear or doesn't do, all that is normal since we may not observe it. And interestingly, rectal temperature, we actually noted that as greater than 39.2. And that essentially puts it at, in Fahrenheit, puts it at about 102.5 degrees Fahrenheit, which is greater than the normal temperature of a calf. And some of that is the data driving that it was the 102.5 cutoff that mattered. And it may be to do with the greater specificity, if you will, picked up by the model at that cutoff, a higher cutoff. And it could be related to the weather, even though that study encompassed 7 months or so. Maybe some of the time that we did that study, the weather was warmer than usual. And then the breathing, that's the sixth factor that got introduced that's not in the Wisconsin scoring system. If there's any abnormal breathing, be it rate or the ease or the opposite of that, the difficulty in breathing, then we call that an abnormality, so rapid or difficult breathing. And we always compared it to the calves around it to adjust for the ambient temperature. Since calves will have a higher breathing rate, respiration rate in hot weather, if the calf is breathing in a more difficult way than its herd mates or its calves surrounding it, or if it's more rapid than the calf surrounding it, then in that case it was an abnormality. And so One other new aspect to the California scoring system is the scores, the points that you assign, varied by the strength of the association with BRD. The score that the veterinarian or the herd calf caretaker assigns to the sign needs to be added at the end. And if they amount to 5 or greater, then the calf is BRD score positive. And we like to call it that because that's the truth. It's a score positive. It's not necessarily a diagnosis that you can get like from a necropsy or an ultrasound. But the scores differ between clinical signs. And the rules are that for all 6, you give 2 points with the exception of 2 clinical signs. Eye discharge gets 2, cough gets 2, breathing gets 2, temperature, which it's not observed, but once you measure it, it gets also 2. The remaining signs that don't get 2 points are nasal discharge gets 4, and ear droop or head tilt gets 5 points. And so the rules are all clinical signs get 2 points, except nasal discharge gets 4 points, and ear droop or head tilt gets 5 points. Now, when I tell you that the cutoff is 5 already for a BRD, that was intriguing to us, and we had to ask a question. Temperature is definitely a sign of BRD. Why isn't that 5 instead? And as you read into the literature and you look at some of those challenge studies, you can see that the temperature spikes for a short period of time sometimes. It's transient. And what lasts for a long time, if you come today and see a calf with BRD and you come again tomorrow and see it, most likely there is nasal discharge, really, most of the time. That's the one that the model picked up and gave it a score of 4, almost closer to the cutoff of 5. And what that essentially means, a calf with a nasal discharge and any other sign, including temperature, you will actually have to score that as a BRD score positive with the California scoring system. And interestingly enough, ear droop and head tilt, and I've talked about that to people from other countries, and interestingly, they don't perceive that as a sign. And I think this is something unique to maybe us in the US and more so California than other regions and states because of the Mycoplasma bovis and how the pathogenesis of that leads up to at some point to otitis media and middle ear infections. And that's the pain that causes the head tilt and the ear flick and the ear droop with extensive damage to the tissues there from the infection and inflammation, the ear droops. And so it's unique to us here in the US and especially California, but that's also a sign that the disease has almost metastasized or reached to the middle ear. That's an advanced case of BRD. That's a case that is a chronic case. And so to me and the team here, we're quite finally pleased that at least we know that the chronic calf, the scoring system can actually pick it also. What that amounts to is that a calf with any 3 clinical signs that do not include nasal discharge or ear droop and head tilt, that makes a BRD case positive, score positive. If there is nasal discharge on any one of the other 6 clinical signs, including temperature, if you will, that makes it BRD score positive. And if the calf shows up with an ear droop or head tilt, that's a chronic BRD already. We know that's also score positive. And the scoring system currently is available as a mobile application in the iOS platform. It could be downloaded from the App Store and has a graphic where you can choose normal or abnormal for each of these 6 signs.
And Sharif, what epidemiologic tools can producers and veterinarians use to manage BRD risk in dairy calves?
Amongst the epidemiological tools are the BRD risk assessment, which we developed here at University of California, Davis. It collects all the information and questions from the BRD 100 and the BRD 10K, and it's available in an app format. The nice thing is it's also linked to the California scoring system on the app, which allows you to identify which calves to score. Users can use the app, and once they complete the risk assessment, if you will, which includes all the questions we discussed, they can then estimate the prevalence of BRD in the herd. And they do that by standing at the very beginning of the herd, be it in hutches, for example. And the app guides them as to which calves should they score using the California scoring system. And at the end, the app gives you the prevalence. And the idea is merged together, you have the risk factors identified and the prevalence. And the app takes you to a survey that you can then, results of the survey that you can then share with the producer. and it identifies any of the questions where there were failures and intervention potentials for you to intervene and actually affect, modify the BRD risk in the calf herd. Together with this approach, once changes are made, users can then come a couple months later, we recommend 2 to 3 months, and redo the risk assessment and the prevalence of BRD. And that allows this feedback mechanism to see that prevalence has decreased, or if it hasn't, then troubleshoot. What were the bottlenecks where management changes couldn't have been made, or where they were made but not maybe enough? And it's a menu of options, if you will. As the more questions there are, interventions that could happen, the producers get to see that in a feedback mechanism over a course of 2 or 3 risk assessments, if you will.
And finally, Sharif, as we wrap up the podcast here, guide our viewer, our listeners to where they can go to get more information and research on this topic.
So one, of course, would be the BRD risk assessment app, which could be accessed through the App Store. And then if you go into Google and you search for VMTRC, for the acronym for VetMed Teaching and Research Center, and you search for BRD, so those two keywords, UC Davis, is, I think, would help narrow it down to. You will get to our VMTRC website, webpage for my lab, where you can see links for the BRD scoring. You could download the brochure if you want to use in the field, and some more details on the studies that we've done there.
I really appreciate your time and expertise on this very important topic of BRD and dairy calves. I really want to encourage our listeners to check out some of those tools that Sharif talked about in this podcast. Work with your producers to develop protocols for both identifying BRD cases as well as implementing prevention using the epidemiologic tools that we discussed today. Thank you for your time on the podcast today, Sharif.
Thank you, Dr. Fred. And I want to make sure I acknowledge my colleagues and the team that produced all these results. I couldn't have done it without them, and I'm honored to have worked with them. So there's definitely the COPI eyes on the grants and the studies, starting with Betsy Carley, University of California Ag and Natural Resources, Allison Van Innenham, Terry Leyenbauer, Pat Blanchard from CAFS Lab, Beata Crossley, Paul Rosito, Randy Anderson from CDFA, my colleagues at the VMTRC, Denise Williams, John Champagne, Carol Collar, and definitely the graduate students who became faculty now and veterinarians elsewhere, Gabby Meyer, William Love, Sasha Dubrovsky, Alyssa Louie, and Lino Deepak, and my collaborators from the BRD CAP grant led by Dr. Womack, of course, and Holly Nybergs and Allison Van Innenham. Thank you again, and I appreciate the opportunity for this podcast.
Thank you, Sharif.